say the 437, which I suppose, again, if you look at it, must be about the 25th or 10th of July, indicating that they had had a prior appointment. And notwithstanding that our request to them was dated 3 weeks earlier, so we did indicate on your behalf as well that we would have preferred if we had much earlier notice. Notwithstanding that, we will agree to reschedule that meeting, which we did. We rescheduled it to today with the mission of agreement. At the same time, you will recall that last week on Friday, we had earlier scheduled the DPI quarterly report plus the 50 plus, of course, the MCD. But that was going to follow the 37. So today we scheduled two engagements with National Consumer Commission, namely the earlier outstanding report, which should have occurred in June, end of May, June, as well as the latest situation, you know, the quarterly report itself. Now, Commissioner did confirm and again yesterday, but unfortunately, this morning we got an SMS indicating that to myself directly, that the Commissioner was on board an FAA flight from Johannesburg to Cape Town, and the flight was experiencing engine problems. Now, all of those who are frequent flyers all hit that problem from time to time, and we're well aware that sort of thing can take up to half an hour and as much as an hour before one finally gets here. So that 6 o'clock plane, for example, is overtaken by a 7 a.m. flight device and pushed that way, and then you wish to report the length of time. But see that as it may, it does happen. And I look at the time now, and I know that when one is that far delayed, you are sometimes only get to arrive at 9:45. I think we've all faced that. So this does appear certainly from the apology that I have received as an SMS at 5:56. The Commissioner would not have expected to be here by 9:30, between 9:30 and 9:45. She is still on her way, and what I'm going to do, but it would be helpful if the Committee Secretary could sit next to me, is we do have a lot of outstanding minutes. We do, don't we? Yes. So rather than find ourselves, you know, mulling around, I'm not going to have it postponed again. Our program is too tight. And I know that some of us have declined invitations where we would like to have been elsewhere because our priority was here in the committee. So many of you have brought your notes along with you. Do we have been close at hand? We're looking at, yes,
on a point of information, is there anybody else here from the NCC that could,
No, this is the, it would seem as if they are all on that flight. So my first question is, who has got minutes here? Right, you've all got that. And that just goes to show it's one of the few committees that I've come to where members carry their minutes around as if they're part of furniture or their name bag. So that's great. We'll deal with the minutes. So the agenda will be slightly rejigged. I'm sure we all expect that. And what we'll do is, in terms of the adoption of the agenda, we would then put minutes, consideration of minutes first. Do we see that? To be followed by, where the advocate, Van Herman, then you can brief the committee. Right. So, apologies, please. I know we have one from Honourable James, who's
accepts an invitation. So where's the other?
20th of June, Wednesday, and we have present, present quote, page 2. This was a very important meeting, and that we had a briefing from the on the co-op itself. And then we have page 3. I know a lot of members want to call that program, you know, the briefing, what do they call it, the briefing, the core program for industrial innovation. Quite often they call it SPI. Probably both SPI is such a, and I'd say, dubious connotation sometimes. Maybe best to call it SPI. So, rather than anything else. But I know it is a tendency for us to talk these things. Having said that, I think that we also said at that time that there would be a need for us to, you know, continue to follow up there on that program as well as on trip. And I'm afraid it's an EG benefit who may not be in there at the time. Right. And page 4. Right, thank you very much. Can we please have someone to propose an option of the minute? Thank you, Honourable Abasa. Seconded by Honourable Vandermeer. Thank you. Right, the 24th. That is Tuesday. Also another full meeting there. Full attendance, page 1. Page 2. I thought some of the points that I think have made there, and I think some of you actually referred to that, were very, very pertinent. And they, although all of these inputs are important from the mainstream group, they are in your hands on. I'd like you to certainly make note of them because some of the points may help them be reiterated by other contributors from that grouping. Page 3. It was of interest to note that Johannesburg, but here we don't know that, and that one I'm a little bit, Johannesburg did make it very, very clear. They were going to make an input, but they made it clear on record that they stood and supported soccer and wanted to be included there. And I think that's got to be added. You know, to make quite clear that the Johannesburg Metro is a big contribution to what's covered by Volga. We actually clarified this, and that would be written. Say, all right, you can just put that in, and with that amendment to Volga there, then we can move ahead. Page 4. And of course that. Can we have somebody propose adoption of those minutes with that inclusion? Honourable Delar? Thank you. Seconded by? Yes, Honourable Hilde. Right, thank you very much. Those are the 2 sets of minutes. Are we up to date now? No. We've got 3 sets. Okay. Are there hands on upstanding? The upstanding hands on. Right. And with that, to remind members as well that the inputs on the co-op was due yesterday, though we went on that visit. Today, because you write them, fine. and you'll be handing them in after the meeting, okay? All right, what is the weather today, yesterday, tonight? But don't take it too seriously, you know. Use will happen. You never can see that. We do have members who are speakers for protocol meetings in this respect. Thank you very much. And more formally, time to brush your teeth. So, I understand if you work to the bone. The opportunity to purchase a book, and obviously we'll look into those issues. We don't want to constrain you that much in the future. Thank you very much. And yes, I'm from Annabelle. Are you happy there sitting in the wilderness?
Yeah.
You are.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I think you promoted me. I'm not on
the board anymore. You know, it's all these things. I think it was an encouragement for you to move up, actually. I think it's a bit of over. No, it's just that with some of us, we'll hear your voice, but we may not be able to see you so well. And I mean, we don't think that there's no separation of powers just because you've closed up. All right. Thank you very much. Next, just a brief thing in terms of the NCC. I did hand out, or asked to be handed out last week sometime, the research report. Because our approach here in the committee is always, we know how busy you are and that you don't all have the time to study every single document. So we got a, and where is the member, senior member of the research? We had Ms. Dick Willing, yes, Bridget, who is a senior researcher, who prepared this report, which took into account the Auditor General's work. You had that last week. And she's still coming. And then having got that, became clear to us that we would need to give some legal advice on various matters. And we then turned to our parliamentary legal section through, of course, Advocate Anna Mirva, to please analyse the documents for us. Because I think our approach is quite clearly that while the media is a different set, that it is wise for us not to simply use that material, and rather to do our own research into these matters. So that we come here clearly not with an empty mind, but at least with a mind that is receptive to analysis that we have called for. Having said that, now please refer members to, in the first instance, the memorandum which you have got, which is confidential to us. I think that's the 18th of July, is that right, Advocate Anna Mirva? Be followed by the summary of some of us were present at the National Consumer Tribunal and an analysis of the combined notices that have come before them per se, pertaining to the NCC. Over to yourself, Lady. All right, let me just allow you to intervene, Mr. Hill.
This morning chapter then includes this letter distributed and then a copy of the email as well.
Okay, thank you.
The memorandum of 18 July deals with the question of the issues of contract and things like that, which I think in the end was one of the side issues to the auditing report. So I think the more important document is the one of 3 August, which deals with the deduction.
Yeah, can I just point out, having looked at that myself, because it was sent to me first, that particular notice on the contract, it became quite clear to me that this was an executive issue per se. We should remember that in the NLB, for example, the committee interviewed, you know, the commissioner, etc., according to that legislation at the time. And we recommended to the executive, these are the people that you will, you know, put on board. However, that doesn't operate in all of our entities. As I said to land code, it will require a political decision as to whether we want to go the route of the ELB process where we interview people at, for the executive, or whether we go the route of most other commissions and entities where the executive, that is the minister, does his interviewing, appoints and does this in consultation with Parliament, but really he makes the decision. So that we did get legal advice on, and it became clear to us from the letter, I'm sure you see yourself, in terms of the Constitution, should the minister wish to delegate certain authorities, he or she would continue to be allowed. So that was the first thing that we got, we cleared the decks with to ensure that we did not go down that route. Secondly, then we did get to pursue other matters, which were service delivery issues and the budget issues and the Auditor General's report. And that was clearly within our mandate. And I do want to advise the committee that I don't think we have to do the work of these executives. We have to exercise our oversight over that executive. Having said that, I will ask the advocates to proceed. So we're going to start with the document we have in front, the 3rd of August, per se, but also, of course, referring to the research report, which is the Auditor General's
What I have done is, in addition to the National Consumer Tribunal, the legal official, contains all the documents that the tribunal, where the tribunal actually dealt with National Consumer Commission matters. So I focused on those judgments, and I summarized the comments made by the tribunal on the actions of the National Consumer Commission. I did not make an analysis of whether the judgment was correct. For me to do that, I would have to go into the papers, into the arguments, etc. So it's simply actually looking before this committee what the Consumer Tribunal is saying. Furthermore, what I may say, what I can do, is to give you an idea of the value or the view of the people and the court of the tribunal judgment. So this actually you had a presentation on, from the tribunal, but I just confirmed with them so you know that the figures are talking to the right aspect. They have had to date 58 orders that I have made that relate to consent and non-consent orders. Also, about 50 down to consumer protection. Of all of that 58, 5 were taken on review. That means that your review process is where the party to the proceedings is of the opinion that this decision is not correct. There's a procedural error or a bias or something like that. So there's unhappiness. But of the 58, only 5 were taken on review. Of that 5, only 1 overturned the tribunal's judgment. And it was done on a point of law. Now, you will know that given the number of students qualifying and the number of lawyers out there, lawyers tend to differ. So it was not that the tribunal made a procedural error, it was an error of law, which is something that can happen. What I also need to point out, though, is that the fact that only 5 were taken on review does not necessarily mean that the 53 others were happy. It could also be that they did not have the money to go to a high court. I'm not saying that is the case, I'm just saying keep in mind there might be other reasons. Fine. Now, when I was looking at the judgment, the legal officer actually sent a report, and that is attached to that opinion. We will see it got this written over strictly confidential, not for public distribution. Now, this document is now a public document. Not because it's before you. What happened was that the Consumer Tribunal wrote the report to the minister in confidence. The National Consumer Commission brought a review application to the High Court in respect of the Auction Alliance matter that was before the tribunal. And the commission was indicating that there is some kind of harassment from the tribunal. And in support their case, they attached this report, the confidential report. Now, because it was attached to court documents, and it was not declared by the court to be confidential, it becomes public record. And therefore, we are allowed to put it before you. Now, I did not include the report as such into my opinion because it repeated the judgment and the concerns that is up in the judgment. However, what I would like to say is to look at something that do not necessarily come out of the judgment. If on page 9 of that report, the tribunal indicates that they are quite concerned because the Consumer Commission has in some instances exceeded its mandate in the order that it would include in the compliance notices. Being a statutory body, you'll understand that is quite a serious allegation. The second thing that I would like to point out to you in that report is on page 20. Now, this will also not be from the judgment, because this is almost a behind-the-scenes aspect. And the Consumer Tribunal indicated that they are quite concerned about the quality of the pleadings submitted by the Consumer Commission, and also about the contentious attitude during hearings being shown to opposing counsel. The opposing counsel would be for companies who are appearing and are challenging compliance notices and so on. So they will be represented by counsel, and the Consumer Tribunal is a bit concerned about the interaction between these counsels. The third thing I would like to put on the same page, page 20, going over on page 21, where they indicate the commissioner is diverting the powers of the minister by publishing notices in the government's gazette. One of these is actually important rules of the tribunal. And unless in fact gives the power to the tribunal to publish, to make something have certain power, that document, if it's not published by the right person, does not have the necessary power. So in fact, the tribunal in one of these cases decided that the important rule, because that was published by the commissioner, not by the minister, actually has no legal standing. The third thing I would like to point out is on page 31, where they say the Consumer Commission is impugning the dignity of other state institutions and actually undermining the National Consumer Tribunal. So that was quite a serious allegation the tribunal is making, and that is because in the report. Now, looking at the judgment, I'm going to take you through the judgment. I'll mention the judgment. I'll mention on in my agenda of my page. I'll point out the paragraph number. I'm going to start from paragraph 8. That's where I'm discussing the relevant cases. I'll mention the case, and I'll just highlight the crucial issues. The first case is the City of Johannesburg with the National Consumer Commission. In this case, the Consumer Tribunal indicated that they understand that the Commission, quite often when dealing with companies or with state organs like the City of Johannesburg, has some frustration where you are trying to work with this company and they just not playing ball. So there is a level of frustration, and the tribunal says that they acknowledge that. They do understand that. But you need to follow procedure. And in this case, they found that the Consumer Commission did not follow procedure. They did not inform the City of Johannesburg that they were being investigated. So they were not given, so the city was not given an opportunity to make representation. And in not being able to make representation, the Commission actually lost sight of a very important fact, namely that the city is subject to certain bylaws. And that if in complying with the bylaws, they might not be able to do certain things at a certain point. So the tribunal said, if you had taken this to account, it might never be necessary to issue a compliance notice and you would not have been here. Furthermore, the compliance notice in itself was effective. It refers to incorrect section of the Consumer Protection Act being transgressed. The one, for instance, is an empowering provision. It's something that empowers the Commission to do something. It's not something that can be transgressed. Another referral, the Act deals with price transgression, whereas the conduct complained of was unfair practice. Now the problem is a compliance notice is actually a very serious document. Non-compliance with a compliance notice can result in criminal charges. It can also result in quite a heavy fine that the tribunal can impose. So it's not a document that you want to play with. And therefore, if the company receives a compliance notice and the compliance notice is defective, you are effectively put in a situation where you can find guilty of a crime, but you don't know how to fix it because it is not being informed. So that is the concern in that case. Paragraph 8.2, Multi-Choice Africa versus the National Consumer Commission, In this instance, the concern was that the Act requires the Commission to consult with the regulator. If a company is subject to a regulator, the regulatory body, the Commission must first consult with the regulatory body. And the same principle applies as with the City of Joburg, where there's bylaws. So the reason for consulting with the regulator is to make sure that there isn't perhaps something in the regulation of this company that is just allowing it to comply with the compliance process. And what happened here was the Commission simply had a meeting with the ICASA. But the tribunal found that it's not consultation, it's not having a meeting, informing someone these are the transgressions and we are going to do this. You need to say, this is what we have. This is what we're going to complain about. And we must give a chance for a response. And the tribunal found that that did not happen. Because that's what happened. Again, the correct procedure was not followed before the compliance notice was issued. The next case is 8.3, Vodacom Service Provider Company and the matter with the National Consumer Commission. In this one, what happened was that there were talks between the Commission and Vodacom. And there was a complaint about certain terms in the contract. Now, Vodacom then went and amended those terms to try and comply and be compliant with the consumer legislation. What the Consumer Commission then failed to do was to look at that amended contract. It simply issued the compliance notice on the old document. And the tribunal said, but this just can't be. You can't negotiate with someone and then replace them for something that has gone before those negotiations. Furthermore, again, no proper consultation with the ICASA. Also, the compliance notice in itself was issued against the incorrect party. Although here, I must say that in the end, there was another case of NTN where the tribunal actually pierced the corporate veil and said that it is the correct party. But here, they said no. You have a service providing company and a Vodacom company. And so one issues the contract and the other one manages the affairs of the whole broadcasting and the cell phone. And here they said no. It must be against the part with the company that actually concludes the contract. So that's the final thing. But something else that is actually more important in this discussion is that the Consumer Commission does not issue the compliance notice based on transgression allowed in the Act. It issued compliance notice because Vodacom refused to sign a consent order. And the tribunal said, you can never force a company to submit to something that they don't want to get over. That you can't say you must sign this unless the Act says you must. And that is not what a consent order is. A consent order is where a settlement is reached, both parties agree, and then it is signed. So the tribunal actually found that the compliance notice in that instance was not lawful, was unreasonable, and was particularly unfair. The next case is hygiene toilet hire and sale in the county on paragraph 8.4. This case I found very interesting because up to date you will notice that it doesn't pick up. So it really actually where you think the consumer needs to be protected against these big guns. But Hygiene Toilet Hire is a smaller company. It's not something I think that anyone here in the city has ever heard of. And what happened in this case, if you listen to what the tribunal found, it actually is a bit worrying. The owner of Hygiene Toilet Hire was cooperating with the Commission. Despite this cooperation, a compliance notice was issued. The letter that accompanied this referred the owner to an objection form. If it's a compliance notice, you can approach the tribunal to object and this is the form that you must complete. This form was not attached at all to the letter. And when the owner then started making inquiries, he was sent from contest to contest. He phoned and said he was told your people aren't the people aren't available. And sorry, this is your press confidential part. Your services were aren't available. And then when someone phoned him back, he was informed that there is no objection form. Then when he attended the DTI on campus, he was told no, the officers moved. He later found out that they didn't move and went back there. And then he spoke with someone and apparently a very long conversation with Steve. But this person at some point told him, we don't give it to people like you. Now I don't say exactly what he was watching that up, or it was simply a way of speaking, but it was said that you people like you don't get it, it should only to the church. And in the end he was saying, well, then I need to go to a court to help me. And not the dinner. Was going to the tribunal. But only at a very late stage was he informed to go to the tribunal and the existence of the tribunal. So because of all these facts, oh, and in addition, the data head of the Consumer Commission does not have a postal address or a physical address where so that he knows where to go to. And because of all of this, the tribunal actually assisted me. It was late in filing. And the tribunal said, I'm not sitting that you're late. I can understand why you are late. Then the compliance notice itself, the tribunal found no investigation was concluded. There was no investigation conducted. The person was complying with the commission. The notice contained contradiction. It was issued in terms of the wrong section of the act. And on top of it all, the date for compliance was the same date on which the business received the notice, thus making compliance actually impossible. The next case is Murray and others versus National Consumer Commission and others, Auction Alliance versus National Consumer Commission. Murray and others were the liquidators on the estate. Auction Alliance conducted an auction to liquidate the estate. There was quite less media coverage in this matter, and the Consumer Commission actually also issued a media statement. The media statement is one of the things that the tribunal expressed concern about. What happened was that, first of all, a compliance notice was issued against the liquidators as well as Auction Alliance. The tribunal found that, first of all, no complaint was lodged against the liquidators. So you can't, if there's no complaint lodged, that indicates to the tribunal that there was no investigation. And if there should not be a compliance notice, the act is quite clear. There must be an investigation before a compliance notice is issued. Then, the compliance notice required Auction Alliance to nullify an auction, something that happened in the past. Now, the tribunal explained that compliance notice speaks to future action. It can't speak to past action. There's other rhetoric in the act for past action. So, the compliance notice was actually an impossibility, and that could not comply with it. And therefore it was set aside. But the tribunal then commented on bias. The Auction Alliance and the liquidators indicated that the commission was actually biased against them, and therefore there was an irregularity in the issuing. Because the Consumer Commission issued a 10-page media statement, which is quite a lengthy media statement. But what is the bad point is the media statement, the NCC accused Auction Alliance of engaging in a mock auction. When the compliance notice was issued, no mention was made of this mock auction. Now that is quite a serious allegation to make in the media, and then not to follow through on that in the compliance notice. And during that, although the tribunal did not say that the Consumer Commission, I'm of the opinion that you are abusing your power, they referred the Commission to a case of Victoria Portland Cement Company versus the Competition Commission, and they quoted the judgment of the court, where the court expressed itself strongly against action taken by the Commission and warned the Commission that it is subject to the Constitution and law, and the court will not allow abuse of power. So to me, that was kind of an indirect message sent to the tribunal. Now, Auction Alliance did not end at the tribunal. This is the one of the review cases. You'll remember when I started off, I was saying there were 58 orders filed for economic review. One of those reviews was actually where the Consumer Commission took the tribunal on review in the court in Khartoum. Now, what has it concerned us is that the court in its judgment gave punitive costs against the commission and not for normal procedural reasons. The court gave punitive costs because it found that the commission failed to disclose very not join the liquidators or auction alliance to the case, and it fails to disclose that it actually reached an agreement with the liquidators. So the liquidators and auction alliance have to request the court to be joined to the proceedings before it. And at that stage, it then came out that there's already an agreement. What is this about? And the court found, because of that, the court will make a penal order. So that is what I found. I can't tell you whether it's correct, what the tribunal said, or whether it's not correct. But we can look at facts, we can look at the truth of certain issues. The fact that the Supreme Court, High Court, also had a problem with not putting all the facts before them and then looking at the concerns of the tribunal. And I think it's part of the same picture that this committee can take as well. Thank you.
Thank you for that very detailed exposition of your analysis at the Bank of America. We do appreciate it. Now, I know the research department wanted to come in and also brief us, and we think it's some serious implementation required. We'd like to just deal with the research report itself. Just looking at members, thank you very much, Advocate Sandover. What I'm looking at is when the FTC comes in, they'll be sitting, of course, with you sitting, that we can ask you now to return to your desk in the wilderness. Thank you. And then we can ask the research, is that Melissa Tundu?
The lead advisor of the tribunal did indicate that she can make the pleadings available to us. So I will request that from her.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think that we want to do a thorough job here, so we're all on top of it. And we do have with us here this morning, Miss Bridget Gertzling, the senior member, because she's just had a medical appointment, but we do have Ms. Tunde Kazi Senga. Yes, who's, maybe not, may not hold that senior position, but is just as well informed on the matter. So over to you with reference to your document that research produced. Is that in order to you? Just a brief, you know, not word for word, but the highlights.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Daniel. I'm a director of Forecast and Commission Public Accounts. I'm just going to give a brief overview of our research report that we did on everything. And it's based on the internal audit report that was conducted on the entity, as well as the dashboard report that was done by Auditor General. There were two dashboard reports quarterly. One was done for the period ending 31st December 2011, and then the other one for 31st March 2012. And the findings. Okay, the main findings by the internal audit were on four headings. Main headings, there were findings on supply chain management, there were findings on payroll employee costs, and then there were findings on asset management as well as payroll costs. So I'm going to work on those. And what does the ad say? on supply chain management. There were supply chain within supply chain management. There were the lack of procurement thresholds when the internal auditors identified the findings. What we did in the together with research, we looked at the PFNA. What does the PFNA say when the entity doesn't have no policies? And then as mentioned in the report, we look at section 76(4) of the PFNA, we specify that national standard must make regulations, so the entity must abide by national standard regulations. And the latest practice note that standard regulation has issued on supply chain is practice note 8 of 2007-2008, where it specifies the threshold that if the procurement less than 2,000, what an entity has to do. If it's less than 2,000, they must get two code system, and that I've got the practice note from them. So the entity didn't have that. Another subheading was inadequate control over access to other forms. In other words, there were no control on the other forms. So the entity was just, there were not numbers. And it's very limiting to have that, because if anyone can just make orders or duplicate orders or other kind of stuff, that's what. And then the PFMA says that, especially like the accounting authority or accounting officer to ensure that there's those controls are in place. Another finding was the supply chain policy does not request suppliers to provide proof of banking details. And we look at the PFMA and section 8, subsection 1, F of the PFMA, as with the federal regulations 8.2.3, it specifies that the housing authority should ensure that all payments are made to creditors and there should be accepted within 30 days. If they don't have banking details, it means that this 30 days might not, the supplier might not be paid within this 30 days. And if they're not paid, it might mean that they will incur no fraudulent and wasteful expenditure. And there were also other issues like lack of vetting. The supplier were not screened before they were awarded the contract. And then further the regulation 16.8.9, it specifies that this page has to say about the abuse of supply chain management system. That the national treasury has got a database of all the suppliers who have been blacklisted. So it's very important for any department or public entity to ensure that it checks with national treasury before it awards a contract. So the thing means that they should contact national treasury. So those were main findings on supply chain management. And then there were also findings on employee costs. Main target was payroll, not certified by K1 manager. That the exceptional report not reviewed by senior staff, and there were also no termination or dismissal policies in place. Yeah. Then the looking at the PFMA and further regulations, but if there's no, if the payroll is not certified by someone, you know, manager, there might be there's a risk that, you know, fictitious employees, because there's no one who's checking, you know, so that, yeah, that's what the one. And also, part of the regulation 3.1.1, it specifies that there should be internal procedures and control measures for approval of payment and processing. And then the risk that the entity doesn't have termination and dismissal policies, you know. That is also terrorist. And then I'm going to go to asset management. Yeah. And the asset management, the findings that there were no fixed asset register, and then informed in place. There were inadequate controls over issuing of assets and lack of formal or approval procedures to control the movement of assets. And also, we looked at PFNA. What does the PFNA say? policies on assets versus that should be an asset versus replaced and then amendments, there should be a growth and mechanism. So it's very important. And also issues on payment processing, lack of confirmation of information sent to the bank. Bank reconciliation not just performed as regularly as you know as required. That's basically the findings on numbers of children of the internal audit for the. And then there are also findings on the dashboard report that the editor general does quarterly for entities. So they did for 2 quarters in the financial year under review. For the year ended, or for the period ended 31st December 2011, there were findings on leadership, on governance, as well as financial and performance management. What the auditor general does, they assess the controls on each of the headings, and then they identify if controls are weak or the improvement of the intervention by the entity. So for the period ended 31st December 2011, there were a lot of findings, but when they did the paperwork match, there were interventions, there was the entity in some areas, for instance in governance, there were interventions in place. So if it's bad, they will issue a red, not those smiles, spaces, yeah, red flag, yeah. So if there's progress, they will issue a yellow one, meaning that it's intervention, you know, in place. And yeah, and if it's good, if the controls are there, and the entity has implemented the recommendations, then they'll issue a green. So in most of in most of areas, for test match it was yellow, which means India intervention is in progress.
Yes, thank you very much, Ms. Tandakazi. Well, it's not Ms. Tandakazi, what it is, it's actually, your name is Matinda. Okay, right, thank you. So what you have concluded with is, then we only have a first audit report, and you seem by what you said now to indicate that the first one must have had a lot more red than the last one. Is that what you're actually saying? And now the last one, they're having the tenth of the intervention, yeah. You know, etc. Are there any red?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which ones were the red?
I think it was
the specific area of I got it here. There was a point and leadership. They have sub points and
we just want to see those areas which remain, if you like, a challenge.
I think under financial and performance management, there was still, you know, some challenge, like compliance with the laws and regulations.
Which one? PFA or what?
PFA and further regulations.
Okay.
There was still, you know,
right, okay. So that report comes from the Auditor General. Of course, we must make it clear, we're not COPA. Why do we get this? Because yes, we are obliged as a portfolio committee to follow and monitor these issues. But that's why I'm saying, what is the key issue here? It becomes, there have been interventions made in various ones between the two Auditor General reports, which incidentally, much like ourselves, they've been this regular follow-up. You know, they don't do this on everyone every 3 months or whatever, but perhaps when serious challenges arise, or because something is a new entity, there needs to be this follow-up, as it were. And that now what remains to be said or done from what you're telling us, Ms. Menga, is that the issue is one of financial control. That is a PF impact issue, largely. That's where you're resting as we sit down here. So, is there any question for clarification on this report? Yes, Honourable Hadebe.
Thank you, President, for the report. I can see that there is a lot of issues. But we know that the National Consumer Commission is a baby in our audience who are
And then because actually this one has been we recall the audit, the general audit from auditor general. I think they're coming out before end of September. By end of September they should be tabled. So we will see, you know, if it's qualified or disclaimer or that kind of stuff. And so we wait for the auditor general report before.
I think with the way this circumference is changing, it's really idle. So from the response one is in progression, that is we want to have to delete this circumference, because they still also are waiting that the AT's report. So 7 years already putting an opinion before that. So if you can delete that, I think she's comfortable with that.
Yeah, you see, this is why I raised what's the key issue that we're still facing at the end of those two reports. What are we facing? Are they only X and Y? Because you can't you can't sort of move before the sort of egg is hatched. But just before the egg is hatched, from these findings you have, I said to you there appears to be some improvement in pension CIP. What remains at this point? Not the point that we're getting, but the point that we have now. And I want that very clear, but I want to also ask Honourable Vanda Merwin to come here.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to give clarity on everything that we're doing here, basically. Because this report that we've just received is very serious, but it has no date, and it is not my understanding. I don't understand who commissioned the report. Why was the scope a researcher asked to do this, was it by Scopa? That's the first thing. Because if Scopa asked the report, fair enough, then I reckon they can take, you know, the Scopa. So I mean, I just need to understand that. Because, you know, from what I can gather, there's good and there's bad. You know, in the overall comments, it talks about areas where internal controls were being improved, which included, I think, leadership, governance, and financial performance management, as it says here. A significant improvement in leadership, financial performance, and governance. So I think it's correct that the report goes to Scopa because they've been able to analyze it against previous and other things. But I think we need to know who commissioned this report, for what purpose, and on what day. It's been presented here, but I don't know when this was done. The second thing is, I'm not 100% sure about, unless it's for background and for helping our understanding about the NCC and its work, in the light of the report we got from the tribunal and the interaction we had with them last week, that is extremely useful. But I always am concerned about sub judice and rules of law when we receive such a report as a portfolio committee, that we do what we're supposed to do and allow other processes to take their course. So I just need a little bit of clarity also on what is expected of us in your view or in the view of the parliamentary system with regard to the legal side of the report as well. Other than for us to interrogate the Commission on some of the problems that have arisen. And when are we even able to do that given that some of these things are subject to care? I also want to say that I don't know why people don't date reports. This confidential report to the minister, it doesn't say who wrote it or what day. I don't know why. Maybe it was because it was presented, but maybe we can get an answer to that, because it was presented to the minister as a confidential report. Thanks.
Thank you very much. As to the first thing, you commissioned this. We commissioned it because we had had the two Auditor General dashboard report. We were due to meet with the Commissioner at the end of May, June, and the Commissioner could not make it. You will recall that there was some meeting with the Johannesburg Metro or another prior engagement intervened. We could not meet with the Commissioner at the time that was scheduled. So that was alongside everything, and that dates back to March. So, you know, it's long-standing. In between that, we got a second report, you see, the Auditor General
Now, the problem Lisa does have that, the Lisa that was sent back to Lisa saying, yeah, was, unfortunately, you've got the balance, you know, the actual work that was here. So I do apologize. I think I must take responsibility for that, for not then attaching the link onto the report itself. But the only reason I wanted to clarify the first and the second is because quite clearly the first AG's report, to put it colloquially, had a lot of red on it. You know, it was covered in red. However, when we come to the second one, there is this change. But with the changes that are there, there is still some red. That means at this report, what were the challenges? We can't preempt, you know, sort of what's going to happen in the future. We're dealing with what we have. Unfortunately, that's the nature of information. That's why I said, for me, what would be important, members, is that this then gets to say, when we got this report, this is what is still red. This is what is so critical to us. But having said that, it is for us to look at three things which we said in March we would do. The one is to get a total clarification on where this budget stood. The allocation, the expenditure, and how this took place. Because at the time, if you look at our report, it is quite clear that in the budget report, if you refer to it, although we didn't focus on it in the debate, that there was a need for us to clarify a number of issues there. And this is related to the audit general's report per se. The second thing which we is required for our trust as a portfolio committee, trusts are allocated for a purpose, for a mandate that a department has or an entity. Have they achieved it? How well have they achieved it? If they haven't achieved it, what are the challenges or the impediments? And so certainly part of this, those that may ask for a lot more than what we have asked for. What we have asked for, we are required to know, bless you, we do at the end of the year find we have a quantified audit. What did we do about it? Or did we pick it up and say, oh hell, that was 6 months ago, we should have done something. So we try to prevent a crisis from developing. So I just want to clear the statement, I think, from the centre. You worked with Mr. Willing on this report. When you came to the end, what was the audit?
this research report that we did identify, but adoptions, for instance, we looked at case 11. We did have, well, we said in progress or in progress. So there are those areas that we have identified.
In progress. In progress. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that makes it clearer. Page 11, members. You've got to agree with that section. We all understand what that means there. At the top of page 11, required controls of operating sector. That is weaving backwards a bit. Then you have governance. It is something in progress. There's been an intervention. I'll take that in a minute, Honourable Vandermeer. And then there's another request. That is what is emanating from that dashboard. That's what we know. Thank you, Honourable Vandermeer.
But Chair, that is till December. We, you know, that says period October to December of all those agreements. Period 4.3 on page 12 is period January to March. Yeah. And then all the, okay, but it's old news, that's not.
Coming to that, when we didn't request an extra one, the Auditor General in his wisdom did a follow-up of this, which I imagine they do when you get that kind of report. And I think we wound up saying right at the end, just before we went back, there has been some intervention. That's where we stopped at. There has been some improvement. What we got a clarification with right now is what the term in progress means. We have made the intervention, but we're not sure how successful it's been. And for us to check with the Commissioner herself, who will be there with her team, we know that this has been... She's here now. She's just arrived. Right. So don't worry about that. They just outside while we finish this point that this we note, can you tell us, share with the committee where you are with it? And then she will share with us where it is she is on this report. And I think that's where we are here. So, yes, we commissioned this, we have it, but I think what the chair, it's not the chair, the whip is saying here, made a reference to the conclusion. Am I right? And on the conclusion, saying with the very last, well, that's exactly the last thing there, the last bullet. The issues that emanate from the two orders are very serious. Yes, they are very serious. And in this regard, the department is justified in ordering an audit review. What that relates to is the question where we were told by the commissioner the department didn't have a right to order another review when it came up earlier. In fact, they do have that right. So that's not debatable. When issues are serious, the department, even before Parliament, should intervene. And we only intervene if the department itself does not properly intervene. But we need to clarify that. Those two points that have come up clearly, this is the Commissioner herself. How far is this progress? Let's just check that with her directly. She will come here with a full team because she did request. What is it that we will be asking of this? And we gave her the bullets on page 1. Can you see that? The same bullet, we requested a brief box. So she has that, but I just want members to take this quite soberly. And I think to do what we've done right now is to balance things as we move along. I hope I'm clear in that regard. Don't move on future information, move on current information that we have. Are we all quite clear on that basis? In terms of Vandermeer, with the question you asked with respect to the report, we were here with the National Tribunal that made it clear to us that a number of the compliances had failed. We are obliged to go into that because that is an instrument. That is, we gave this power through legislation to the NCC, and we wanted this power used wisely and effectively. And yes, we have to look into and we choose to look into it through the documents that are available to us. Now, I am confidently assured the documents we have before us, anyone in South Africa cannot take. It's not closed. It's not computer safe to say. But the reason I have left the contract alone, and I'm saying this for your benefit, Honourable Hill Lewis, because you raised, you know, that particular point, is that, yes, there was a need for me as chair to clarify that. But there would appear to be, perhaps, still that matter is, you know, perhaps may have been resolved to some extent by the court, but certainly the Commissioner may not feel that it has been resolved, put it that way. thought it unwise for us to go down into an executive matter per se. That's all I'm saying here. So you've got the information, but let's not get off our mandate. That's all I'm asking, members. Let's not go down side streets. Let's look at service delivery and how effectively it has been achieved. Are we at one on that point? Right. I'll then ask the secretary to ask the commission to come. We're going to start. We'd like to welcome the Commissioner, Annual Consumer Commission, and that is Ms. Mantuse Matlala. We'd also like to welcome Mr. Kabo Mamsu, CXO, just indicate to committee members where you are, and also the head of legal there, which is similar to my first name. It's difficult to get my tongue around it. It's all on three. I'm sure that's not it. Tupayate. Now, how do you say your name? I always do that with people when they look at my name.
Washoda Tupayate. Tupayate,
I will have to make an idea you say that now. I think it's good for us to see the names of all of our people so that we get at least following from yesterday, a better understanding of the languages that are spoken in our country. It's not only one language, of course. It's more than the 11, and it's a rich tapestry that we do have in our country. You're all very welcome. We have already welcomed people like the DTV here earlier, etc. We do have Alessi, but I've got one here, and the other one is Ms. Pumeza Mtungu, Division Head Education, Compliance and Advocacy. I don't have anyone else that you would introduce, anyone else, Mama Dupe. That. We also did get your, starting from very early this morning to me, directly, your delay in terms of the FAA flight, and I think members were very understanding thereof, and we got on. pager because we had to read that up. We just had it earlier, a few pager. And that was indicating the, there would be two engagements, one following the other. Of course, perhaps from time to time they would interface, you know. But the first one was whether the NCC has effectively fulfilled its mandate in accordance with the Consumer Protection Act number 68 of 2008 since its inception. What impediments exist, if any, in the NCC fulfilling its mandate? As update on the financial performance of the NCC, and clearly that takes into account the two audits that have been done by the Auditor General in this regard, as well as its compliance with respect to the PFMA and necessary treasury regulations. Four, whether proper internal control mechanisms have been implemented, as we have pointed that out before. Five, the existence and functioning of internal audit function and audit committee, which was also something again raised with yourself. Number six, the existence, approval, and communication of financial policies. Seven, the existence of an accounting system that controls around the accounting system. Eight, the existence and communication of an approved delegation of authority. Monthly recons, trial balances, the mechanics, if you like, which also are required. And finally, of the asset register. 12, the existence and functioning of supply chain management systems and procedures. The second engagement brief, which would have occurred on Friday, but which, because you said today, being unsupported in the earlier response, will simply follow. And I think that is very straightforward. It's a quarterly one, the third quarterly, and I think you've dealt with that kind of thing before. The other thing which I think is very important is for a clear understanding that you head up the National Consumer Commission, either there are many people in that Consumer Commission, and I think you've attested to that today by bringing along as many people as possible. And I wish to say this to all of you in the NCC, you all are collective components of the NCC. And therefore we want to hear directly, so there's no one standing on their own as it were responding to these matters. All right. Having said that, Commissioner, I think you, it would be preferable if you gave us a brief overview. You know already why we're here and so on, and then we'll engage. Are we all on board with that approach? Okay. Let's not make this too long, but the highlight, we've got the documentation in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, First of all, we'd like to
starting off point, it's important for me to emphasize that yes, we'll deal with the highlights, but it's important
today, so you've got the presentation in front of us, which many of us got yesterday or the day before, highlight the actual, and you just put pointers aside yourself, the service delivery, the performance. This is what you were expected to do, this is the mandate, and this is what you've done. So that is, if you like, an alignment between the three issues, and you've certainly captured it right.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We're not going to go through it at the entire report, we're just going to deal with the key issues. And I believe the report given in the format that has been given is obviously to give complete information to the committee. There are other issues we'd like us to deal with or then deal with. But I think that a key talk in relation to our operational information and our performance information, it's important that that I indicate that the AG has given us a signal of health with regard to that. They found no reason to qualify or question the performance information of the NCC, and they believe that we have met the performance requirements in terms of the strategic plan of the NCC. And in brief, in relation to our financial performance, there are issues that you've asked for us to deal with in some greater detail, which we will deal with. But I think it's also important to indicate that we did receive an unqualified audit, and we believe that it's quite an important issue and a very important accolade for the Commission. Because I do believe earlier on in the year, our mother department was wary and worried that we would get a qualified report. But I'd like to report to the committee that our report from the AG has been unqualified report, and we are very glad that that can happen because there was a fear from the department that if we get water qualification, it could have an impact on the report. But I'm sure the Auditor General have already communicated this message to yourself, Madam Chair, that we have received an unqualified report from the Auditor General. There may be a few gremlins here and there, but we do have an unqualified report. In fact, I do have a letter from the Auditor General to that effect, that our report is unqualified. But we'll obviously talk to the mechanics and the systems that may need further refinement, but we believe that this should be sorted out. But in regards to operational information, the AG has specifically stated that our operational information has passed the test 100%. Now, I'll just go into the key issues. Madam Chair, I think it's important that I first start with the number of consumers that, because I believe there are three critical issues in relation to our money. It's obviously creating awareness around the Consumer Protection Act and the rights that consumers have in relation to the Act. The second issue is around the key work of complaint handling and making sure we resolve complaints. And the third issue, I think, is quite critical that needs to be dealt with, is the manner in which matters are then resolved at the end level, meaning through either through the tribunal or to the court of law or through the issuance of compliance notice and consent agreement. The first issue, if you look at slide, the slide that we presented under Meta 1.1, you will see that the Commission has projected that it could reach 10 million consumers.
I don't know whether my eyes are alone, because I would add the IT 50, but the screen is not there.
Able to statement. We have made an application that we've conducted individuals, workshops, and conferences. And I'd like to just indicate in this comment that we've done 15 continuing education on workshops throughout the 9 provinces. We did so fall short in relation to the measles because they projected that we would deny measles, meaning that we're doing measles in each province. Due to financial constraints, we're not able to reach all the provinces. But secondly, we also found that there are challenges on the ground in relation to obviously mobilizing political and traditional structures on the ground to actually support our initiatives in relation to measles. But that also posed some of the mechanics in relation to setting up measles and making sure that they're fully achieved. But through the consumer awareness workshop and obviously activations that the Commission has undertaken, which is in primary schools, through more activations and discussions with different government departments and working through CACUX, we have been able to reach a substantial number of consumers. And just to take the kind of work that the Commission has done, I'll just ask the head of our witness to just give you a tutorial presentation of the kind of research that you've had. That's the first copy of the presentation that has been handed out to all the candidates. I want to try and just click it here. Okay, well just find the things on this thing.
Right. Okay, we all got a copy now? Right.
There we go.
Here we are.
So you will see that in one of the slides, the color picture on the left, we very engaging. A primary, Sunnyside Primary School last year during Nelson Mandela Day. What we want to do as a commission is to make sure that consumer protection issues, learning, become part of lifelong learning for kids as early as primary school age. This is what we initiated, we started with last year, and we're hoping and we want to this year to make our presence more permanent in the form of establishing consumer clubs within the school, so that on a monthly basis we interact with children, so that we can cultivate future consumers that are wise and do not fall easily to traps and scams. We also go to churches, you will see at the bottom there, go to churches and spread the word on the consumer on the loan protection. This year we were with the South African National Council for the Blind, where we donated material in Braille to make sure that also the people living with disabilities are not left out in terms of what is happening around them. You will see those two pictures on the right. That's what we did. We also go to communities. We also pay special attention to women through the sexual associations, because we believe that there's a lot of money that tends to be generated for the whole year. They say women pay through the doctors, and then it would be every day to see all that money. But they must be able to realize their goals at the end of the year after they save. So our intention there is to make sure that we educate them so that when they go out and buy at the end of the year, they get value for money and then don't get it off. We also do, we do not forget our urban consumers, because we have also started them visiting at malls where exactly we find the consumers in action. What we do while we are at the mall, we bring up into teams, some would make the exhibition desk as you see there, and then some will actually go shop to shop, handing out flyers and responding on the spot to questions that are raised by business as we are, engaging with them. This has proved to be very much wise, because on that day, when we were at the mall in Ayabini, the full count according to the mall administrators was 14,000. So it's more or less the people that at least had awareness raised around consumer issues on that day. We also engage with business via workshops where we present, and then you will see at the corner there we were meeting with the Joint Taxi Association, taxi owners. Our aim there was to, so that we can ultimately reach taxi drivers who are the ultimate culprits when it comes to consumer rights violations, and ultimately to gain access within the taxi rights. We also talk a lot to government employees, we've been to the Public Service Commission, we've been to the post office, speaking to managers, we've been to the Metro Rail, speaking to managers and staff. We've been, what we want to do going forward is to make sure that we establish some kind of a relationship with the employee assistance programs within government finance to make sure that our relationship and engagement with government employees is more sustained, so that they can become wiser as they go out and transact in the market. So, for the August month, Women's Month last year, we engaged, as I've mentioned, doctoral women, and this is an article that came out as a result of our engagement with them. So the publication is called Doctoral Voice, and the readership is mainly women in doctors. And then to the right is an article that we did for Consumer SA, which is a magazine that is read mainly by commuters of trains and taxis. So more or less, this is some of the work that we've done as far as awareness is concerned. So I think I'll leave it there for now, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Martin. The other issue, I'm just going to go back to the slide, but the other critical initiative that the Commission has put in place in relation to making sure that we reach consumers and we fully interact with consumers in all their different dimensions. I think the action has touched on this slightly, but in relation to this, I believe that recently there's been a lot of upheaval around whether or not the FCC is giving business a sufficient hearing and whether we fully engage with business. You will note that we presented to the committee our specific document. We did say that we wanted to set up standing advisory committees, but we have one for the provincial offices of consumer protection, the second one would be for vulnerable consumers, the third one would be for business. And we've been at great pains to try and set up this particular standing advisory committee. In fact, the very basic considerations of business that we're saying that they do have access to the committee are the ones that we've been engaging with at great length. Specifically, So any person who's not allowed to join the Clinton engagement with the Commission, while more than willing to actually engage them. In fact, we've been engaged with academia, and we've also engaged with the tuition in relation to the Consumer Protection Act and the education to have an engagement together. But I think, Madam Chairperson and Honourable Members, I think that that basically deals with the issue of awareness and whether or not this is child star managed in relation to awareness. The second issue is around the issue of complaint handling and whether or not we're dealing with the complaints that are put before the door of the Commission. I just want to beg your indulgence, Madam Chairperson and Honourable Members, just indicate that the figure that I see on the slide are not complete. There are additional figures that need to be added. But safe to say that in relation to our key objective of resolving complaints, which we put a high target of 95% of complaints received being resolved to PPE that we received, we're able to actually achieve that target. And specifically, I think it's important to indicate that with a very meager staff and a very meager budget, we've been able to actually process more than 73,000 calls that have come to the call center of the NCC. We've also received over 16,831 complaints, so not over, but received 16,831 complaints. You will recall that when I started dealing with the issue of our awareness, I said that the effects and impacts in relation to our awareness working themselves in relation to the kinds of queries that we receive and complaints that we receive. But I believe that having 73,959 citizens actually contacting the Commission in order to get value from our services is indicating that we are reaching a large number of the population. But you will note that, as I indicated in previous hearings before this committee, that we do have situations whereby we do lose some of the calls. So I'm sure if we're able to catch a larger number of the calls, the number will even be higher. But you have made to date we've received close to 16,801 complaints. These complaints have been processed. As a consequence of these complaints being processed, we've issued 374 compliance notices. We've issued 2,937 consent agreements. We've had conciliations that were conducted in 3,597 matters, with 206 referrals. We've had, what the things that are missing there is that we've had, there are some duplications like any other system. We've had 725 duplications. We've had 410 withdrawals because we have situations where the consumers will not complain and then choose to withdraw it after we intervene. We've given advisory opinions in 2018 matters whereby consumers don't call us simply to lodge. They don't want to actually fully lodge a complaint, but they contact the Commission in order to get an advisory opinion, or sometimes in business they say they would contact the Commission before they undertake a specific step and then attempt to get advice on whether or not those users are on the right side of the Consumer Protection Act or not. So we've provided 2018 advisory opinions, and there's been reformulations to the tune of 1,706. Maybe I should just, before I hand over to Kulim, which then speak to the actual dynamics around complaint handling, I think I need to just explain what reformulation is. You will find that in situations whereby the consumer will lodge a complaint but not give sufficient information, or it doesn't come up previous to what is the nature of the complaint. We then send it back to the consumer and say, could you please give us that in relation to X, Y, and Z, so that when we send it over to business or to the supplier, we have received the relevant clarity so that it's clearly comprehensible and they would then be able to address the matter. But at this point, I think I'll just hand over to Kulim to then speak to the specifics in relation to the type of complaints and the hierarchy of complaints in relation to the ones that we've dealt with today.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, citizens of the Parliament. The nature of complaints received by the Commission is motor vehicles. This category has got the highest number of complaints that are received in the Commission. And the trend in the common trends that we find is that there are defective vehicles, misleading information and undisclosed information from dealers about the condition of the vehicle that the consumer is buying. And these complaints are from small dealership and large dealership, including an when a consumer's car needs to be repaired and still under warranty and the dealer does not want to repay back the warranty. I'm just going to give you examples of some of the complaints that we deal with at the Commission in complaint handling. There's a complaint into Boyd when you BMW SC and discovered that the vehicle had defect on it. He went to set an approved BMW to say the car had defect on it, but it took him 3 lines. There was no help from BMW to assist with him giving to replace him with a brand new car. After the Commission, after he had lost the complaint, we started in our intervention at the Commission. The complainant's car was taken back and BMW refunded the complainant $9.48. And the other complaint that we deal with is when a complainant has sold a second-hand vehicle at the price of the new vehicle. After the commission's intervention, the complainant was given a brand new car by the dealer at no cost or extra additional cost. This clearly shows that business out there is cheating consumers who do not know their rights as consumers. But immediately after we intervened at the commission, then the complainant got the right car and a brand new car. The other category that I'll be getting into is the retail category. It has the second highest complaints that we receive. Most of the complaints that we receive requests for refund, exchange, returns, and replacement of defective goods, and other business practices and poor quality of goods. And with the closing out of complaints, most of it is about inferior quality goods and poor consumer services. And with the financial outlet complaints, it becomes to defective goods and repossessing items due to inability to make payments in proper shelving, self-labeling when you get into a store. And some of the complaints are manufacturing complaints are damaged goods when they arrive to a retail store. They are already damaged from the retail. And also we get complaints from franchise agreements when a consumer signed in a franchise agreement and there was no disclosure of some of the information. And currently at this moment in time, the commission is investigating a complaint against Alani Bread. The complainant bought bread and she found that there was hay on the bread and there was animal feces on the bread. So currently at this moment in time, there's a picture on the slide there with the animal hay on it. Currently at this moment in time, we are working with Currently at this moment in time, the commission has also taken the bread to a laboratory, which sometimes to see if it is animal hay and animal feces on the bread. And also we had a complaint about the trust condom matter. At the current moment, what has happened to the matter is that the commission had to look for a product laboratory to take the condoms for testing. But due to the fact that the number of samples that was requested for the testing was not provided by trans condoms, we are unable to conduct the test. So currently at this moment in time, the commission is currently investigating and other sources of means to finalize the matter. And then other complaints that we get are from government departments and other municipalities, local government and provincial government and government agencies. Most of these complaints include incorrect billing, cutting off electricity, estimating billing. These complaints are mostly from city of Clover and also poor or non-service delivery by the government department. Some of these complaints that are lodged against departments, some of them maybe are correction orders, road accidents, and etc. With regard to the complaints against city of Clover, the commission undertook a project early this year in having all the COC matters set down for conciliation, and the commission has saved 6.404.7929 million for consumers. With this project, the commission has seen the dedication of the City of Joburg. This is after the commission had taken City of Joburg to the National Consumer Tribunal, meaning that City of Joburg has now started to be part to now respond to complaints to come in full force to dealing with the matters that are lodged against City of Joburg. Moving to the second slide, telecommunication. These matters include incorrect billing, SADC licensing from MultiChoice and SADC, consumer having to pay for TV license without TV units, and other matters. I hope Telkom had the highest complaint with regard to expiring data bundle and slowing internet connection. The common trend in telecommunication is unauthorized deduction, incorrect billing, and poor service. This includes defective handsets from poor service from MTN, Cell C, Vodacom, Mega Mobile, Virgin Mobile, and Altic AutoPay. The complaints that we receive where consumer had a defective handset and wanted to cancel the contract with Vodacom. When consumers approach the suppliers themselves, they are given a runaround, a permission to wait for 6 months. But when they come to the commission, we've got a process that we have put in place to deal with these matters and giving them home over to the suppliers, which is when the consumer has a handset replaced and the contract was cancelled, that had we not intervened in this matter, the consumer would have been still behaving around. And the other category that we have is financial services. This service consists of banks. Most of the complaints that are lodged against banks, like Standard Bank, Net Bank, Absa, Capitec Bank, and FNB. And most of the complaints are about assets being reported, unauthorized deduction, and interest rates incurring without the consumer's knowledge, and unfair business practice from the bank side. The common sense in this is that consumers' cards are being reported, and their houses failure to payment, giving to pay back the bank. In some of the complaints that we've had, we receive complaints where consumers are advised by the bank to say they should go under sequestration. And after going under sequestration, they will be able to buy back the property from the bank, which is untrue, because immediately after your property, you go under sequestration, everything of yours goes at auction. So this clearly shows that there is in the financial services, there is misleading of consumers, and consumers are losing their properties. So as a commission, we are trying to assess with such matters as well. And the other category is property. Many of these complaints are against ethics agency body corporate and property agents. The most common trend is misleading, cancellation of contracts and of lease agreements, and poor workmanship and poor services. With this category, what we've seen is that most of the complaints that we get are against the ethics agents and body corporate. They do ESCOM provides or CISO Global provides an estate agency with electricity, and they have to supply everyone in the complex. But what normally happens, they supply everyone, but we do not know how the estate agencies and body corporate can relate to the electricity that they go up on people. So which clearly shows, because it shows that there's something that is not right that they are doing when they do the billing. They estimate the billing, and some of the consumers do not have electricity because they have not paid, because they saw this is unfair business practice for them. The third slide talks to mental health services. This talks to an ability to settle mental health bills by the mental health aid scheme, which consumers end up being unfairly blacklisted, because medical aid schemes do not tell consumers when they go for medical treatment that we will not be able to pay for such these services, but they mislead the consumer and tell them you can go under the treatment, the medical aid will cover all the services that have been rendered. And one of their trends as well in the medical services is overcharging of consumers, and also private doctors and hospitals where do not disclose information that is critical for a consumer to make a decision if they would want to go on with the treatment or not. And the other category is fitness center. The common trend is cancellation of a contract, unauthorized deduction, or overexpired contract. And this has shown us that when dealing with fitness centers, they deduct from people's accounts without the consumer giving them the authority to do that, which now makes the fitness club and the bank, meaning that when the consumer wants to cancel the contract, they tell the consumer now they have to go back to the supplier and ask the supplier that they need to get a letter to say they are canceling their contract. So in what we've seen as well, most of these fitness clubs charge 50% when a person wants to cancel their contract, which is not fair to the consumer. Consumers have more reasons why they want to cancel their contract, and some the affordability of the new contract as well. So most of the letters we assist the consumers, and we try to speak to the reporting to the supplier and ask them that they should charge a reasonable penalty fee. And traveling and tourism, many of these complaints are about unfair business practices, refunds for cancellation of booking and poor service. And most of these complaints are against airlines and also traveling agencies. Timeshare, major of these complaints are about contract cancellation, misleading and unfair terms and conditions, and most of the complaints are about cancellation of the contract. And this has shown us with the timeshare suppliers. They are going out there and dining for pensioners, because most of these people who have got timeshares are pensioners, and most of them cannot afford to pay for timeshares. Thank you very much. That's my
presentation. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Now, the very last section, which
poor employment. And as such, we have referred those particular terms and conditions to their quality, to their quality court, and we do believe that the quality court will make a decision in due course in relation to whether or not those terms and conditions are discriminatory or they are in compliance with the constitutional mandate. The next area is in relation to the mobile, or in relation to the ICT sector. I think we've spoken at great length around this issue. The compliance, we should compliance notices because we felt that the failure to the terms and conditions will meet the aspirations of the Consumer Protection Act. We needed compliance notices, and I do believe that we get the legal session will speak to the fact that the National Consumer Tribunal has felt that these compliance notices are not completely accord with the Consumer Protection Act. We obviously have a different view around the matter, but our critical concern is that was this issue between the Consumer Commission and the tribunal around what should be in the compliance notice or whether compliance notice should be issued or not. Whilst this goes on, consumers continue to suffer. Quality of services is still a concern. The issue of cost in relation to ICT services is still a concern. And we believe that it's quite imperative, that these issues are addressed as quickly as possible. Issues of pay TV, we'd like to indicate to this sitting today that we have made a lot of strides in regard to that. In fact, we feel that the terms and conditions of contract for pay TV were actually approved without actually having to get to the tribunal phase. We issued compliance notices, we entered into negotiations with the pay TV operators, which is your top TV and mouse chain, and believe that they moved their terms and conditions a long way towards compliance with the Protection Act. I think there's still just one critical issue that still remains outstanding in relation to bundling and the value that consumers will get from the bundling of these particular services. But we do believe that that issue may be one of the issues that will still need to refer to the tribunal because we do not believe we should have an issue with regard to
12:30. That's much more constructive. Thank you very much. It'll be nice to all be here at the same time. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chairman of the committee. I'll briefly talk to you to the work that we've done, as well as the real frustrations that we've had, you know, at the Legal Services Division of the National Consumer Commission. We originally started testing water sometimes last year with the issues of compliance to the issue of journalism. It's common cause, it's common knowledge now that the compliance notices were set aside. The effect of that, however, has been that, as we have indicated from when she was making an address, that we've seen a dramatic change in the attitude by the city of London that is with respect to resolving consumer complaints. We've seen an increase in attendance by the city of London to resolving various consumer complaints that have played to the city over a number of months. We have also issued compliance notices within the cell phone and mobile cell phone industry against literally all major cell phone companies. Those vendors were actually, all of them were sent to the tribunal. They were all defended obviously by these companies, which clearly are hugely resourced, you all know that. Some of these matters are still, judgments that the tribunal are still outstanding, for example, in the CNC matter, but in all other matters where the tribunal has aside our compliance notices, the effect of that as well has been that when we issue compliance notices originally, we issue compliance notices where we indicated between 10 to 15 different clauses of subscriber agreements of certain companies that are non-compliant with the Act. The effect, however, has been that the one major cell phone company has came back to the commission and engaged us, and we are at a point where we have agreed with cell phone companies to have their supplier agreement amended. We are down to only two clauses of the Consumer Protection Act, Section 14 and 63. There is still a very serious interpretative problem with that matter. I believe that once we've been able to resolve the issue of interpretation as well that we've got the tribunal, we then know the way forward with regards to resolving those two outstanding problems within the contracts of cell phone companies. An investigation of also carried out, as the commission has indicated, within the mutual aid schemes. We undertook an exercise of implementing the agreement of literally all the medical schemes. Obviously registered under the Veterans Schemes Act by the Council for Medical Aid. We are at the point where we identified a couple of clauses which there are less transgressions, obviously, but the one that became extremely concerning for us was the one that we felt is discriminatory. There is a general clause in all the medical schemes which actually exclude by implication. It's not specific, it's got a condition waiting specific, a condition, a specific period of 12 months, which means if you are, for example, a woman and you are expected at the time of entering into at the time when you enter into a contract with any medical scheme in South Africa, you are then excluded from accessing benefits for the next 12 months. We feel that that is discriminatory, and it is on that basis that we've actually filed an application to declare those specific clauses. Contrary to the Constitution, contrary to the Consumer Protection Act, contrary to whatever legislation that we've got in South Africa that's discriminatory. That process is still unfolding. We haven't got a date. We haven't even actually reached a point where I can say we've completed the exchange of pleading between parties, but the application has already been filed with the Inquiry Court. We also issued a compliance notice in the broadcasting sector. Mainly the concern there was with regard to your paid edition, we felt that the contract thereof are contrary to the CPA in the sense that they make provision for product vanity, which according to our interpretation it is in that contravention of the CPA. The Matcho specifically has been back to us and said they actually believe that they are not that their practice is not contrary to the CPA. We are going then to, we've agreed then to take that once the other issue of interpretation that I'm going to indicate now has been resolved. We also engaged with the terms and conditions of SAMBA, and this was at a time when there was a series of upheaval with regards to the rolling out of the e-tolling in Gauteng, as we are all aware. That matter is obvious before the Constitutional Court with regards to whether it should or it should not be, but what we dealt with specifically as the National Consumer Commission was the issue of the terms and conditions of SAMBA. We worked tirelessly with SAMBA as well as their legal team, and we managed to get out of some of the terms and conditions that we can say that they are CPA compliant. So obviously that's not one of the issues that is before the Home Court right now because of the intervention of the National Consumer Commission. We also dealt with a case that really was highlighted in South African public, and that is the letter of auction alliance. We had a prominent businessman who lodged a complaint after a botched auction here in the Western Cape. As a result of which lodged a complaint with us, we've investigated that there has been, you know, we've been in and out of court really, and the tribunal as well with regards to this matter has taken a lot of energy out of us. We are still, you know, pursuing this matter vigorously. The impact of that in the main really has been that we have actually came to realize the rot that there in the insolvency industry as a whole, ranging from attorneys to banks to insolvency practitioners in general. We as a result of that letter, we've seen an increase in the number of consumers who come to complain with regard to the conduct of insolvency practitioners. I think we are sitting right now in excess of, I think, about 7 or 8. Mainly against one company, of course, liquidators are involved. We've got matters that we're investigating against liquidators, but auctioneers and companies as well. So that has been one of the lessons that we've learned. We are currently investigating many of the complaints. We have had challenges. What I've just stated has been the highest, but we've had serious challenges as well. Well, you see, the Consumer Protection Act is a piece of legislation, obviously, and when we issue compliance notices to various industry players, quite often these are not small companies. These are multinationals, these are multi-billionaire companies. They have the resources to buy on, they have the resources to money the world, that is our belief. We've been challenged, we've been attacked for using the word, you know, suppliers take the point, but that is the issue. As it is right now, we don't have a single matter that has been before the tribunal where we have actually managed to deal with issues of substance. Obviously, you issue a compliance notice, you are faced with all sorts of challenges from failure to investigate, which is not true. We do investigate, we do take cases that we believe are watertight to the tribunal, but they've got the resources to make them around. And as the commissioner has pointed out, we are so unresolved that we actually have to recall all the matters where we have engaged the services of external attorneys, and we have actually been doing these matters ourselves within the commission. This clearly, you know, when you look at the cost that suppliers have incurred at the tribunal for bringing senior counsel and everything, our estimate puts this at in excess of 30 million, which is what we would have had to spend as well, if we were also going to reciprocate and use services of senior counsel as well. But we do not believe that the problem is that we don't know what we are doing. We just believe that we have actually recently identified a serious interpretive problem, not between us and the suppliers, but between us and our mother sister organization, that is the National Consumer Tribunal, where in a recent ruling that we got, we read through the judgment and we realized that one of the reasons why we might have been having a foreign time at the tribunal is because the tribunal believes that the National Consumer Commission is not empowered to issue a compliance notice. That is not our reading of the Act. Obviously, it is the NCT's reading of the Act, and obviously, without the National Consumer Commission being empowered to issue a compliance notice, that is going to hamper the job of the National Consumer Commission significantly, because for us, the only ultimate tool of compliance of enforcement is a compliance notice, and without that, we might as well shut the door. That's our thing. So, that is an issue that would obviously have to have a direction of the court of law to assist both parties with regards to issues of interpretation as to whether we are correct or not. It's not about fighting for, I mean, you know, pending the tribunal court or the tribunal taking us to court. It's about bringing about certainty in the interpretation of the act, without which there's nothing that we can do as a commission. We have also had a serious interpretation, second and serious interpretation problem.
In general,
the ruling said the National Consumer Commission is not empowered to. The interpretation of the tribunal basically is that when you issue a compliance notice, you are already declaring a conduct prohibited. So essentially, the rule is that I cannot read the act, look at the facts that is presented before me, and issue a compliance notice because I believe that their conduct amounts to a particular transgression of the act. And if we issue a compliance notice, it means, as the Commission, we have already declared a conduct prohibited, but we believe we're entitled to do that. We're entitled to receive a complaint from a consumer, classify it as a transgression of the specific section of the Consumer Protection Act, and thereafter issue a compliance notice, which of course the other party has the right to file an objection in the tribunal saying, I do not agree with the Commission that I am in breach. And our belief is that then Commission, the tribunal has to sit down, hear both parties, with regard to whether the tribunal then agrees or it doesn't. But that is the issue. They believe that we're not entitled to issue a compliance notice without first approaching the tribunal to declare a conduct prohibited. Because when you look at it, actually, the interpretation of the way, the manner that CAFCOM used to operate. But we believe that with the enactment of the Consumer Protection Act, it was no more necessary for the enforcer to actually approach the minister to declare a conduct prohibited. Conducts are now declared specifically prohibited as a result of the enactment of the Consumer Protection Act. But those are issues that will obviously have to be clarified. The mechanism for us to believe is the declaration order in the High Court. Yes.
Have you
only last issue of interpretation as well, which is the difference between us and tribunal, which takes course also from the one I just stated now. Is the issue of an interim relief, where we also have having an interpretative problem in the tribunal, where they believe that we don't have a local standing to file an interim relief application on behalf of consumers. So we are not particularly sure what the interpretation is, but our belief was that once we issue a compliance notice, and there's a consumer who's distressed at that point and cannot wait, for example, for the matter to be enrolled in due course, we can bring an urgent application, which is called an interim section amount for relief, for the consumer to be able to access relief in the interim when the matter is still before the tribunal. Our understanding of the ruling that we've got in one of the matters is that we do not have the local standing to file an application on behalf of the consumer, and that is of course worrying for us. It's one of those issues that we feel, for purposes of enforcement and consumer protection issues, will have to be dealt with quite urgently, either before the court, because obviously you cannot change one's view with regards to interpretation through negotiations. We do not even believe that we've got that power to actually set a workshop to convince the tribunal. It's actually not desirable. The only way, without being seen to be a loggerhead, is to file an application for the court to be able to assist parties with regards to issues of interpretation.
Would that be all that you're addressing then in terms of couch? Some
Chair, Honourable Carol Lewis, Honourable Sue Santamova, Honourable Kageri, and Honourable Albert. Can we, put it this way, we're all going to get fined. Let's not take our 20 questions in one go. Let's deal with two or three pertinent ones, each one of us. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And my question, as you say, I do have a lot of questions, but I just wanted to comment on something that the prior class has said right now. The dispute about the compliance services. In fact, the letter from the tribunal doesn't argue that you don't have the right to issue compliance notices, as you just said. They argue something quite different. They argue that you're not following the correct procedure in issuing compliance notices. That you're fully entitled to do so, but that it must be based on a proper investigation and that you need to reach a conclusion on reasonable grounds. The whole thing set up here about why you are not issuing compliance notices properly. There's a whole lot of legal errors that they refer to. That's very different from the argument you just made. Do you just want to clarify that?
We'll allow for three questions, clarification, go back. Yes, thank you, Honourable Hilton. Yes, thank you very much, Honourable Madam Irvin.
Thank you very much, Chair. And first, let me say, after what you have said, we have not received Auditor General's report yet, but we are very pleased, I would say, that if there's a clean audit. And what we have received is information that on the chart, the smiley faces, there are a lot more orange dashboards. There are a lot more oranges or yellows, which is, as I say, as a committee, an encouraging sign, and that there are a lot of progress has been made on from the December report, which has some problems. But I would like to refer to the matter dealt with by the legal advisor, and I'd like to follow on from where my colleague from the DA and left off. We have been given sight of a document that is appended to your papers to court regarding the auction alliance matter. And in summary, some of the concerns that this document produced were the following: that the NCC says that in the tribunal has in some instances exceeded its mandate in orders to include in the compliance notice. It is submitting poorly drafted pleadings to the NCC and displays contemptuous attitude during hearing. These are things that we have been given, that document, that the Commissioner usurps the powers of the Minister, that the NCC impugns the dignity of other state interest institutions. Very serious allegations. And I would like to draw the attention of the Commissioner, through yourself, Chair, to what the Commission as an organ of state is obliged to do in terms of the Constitution. And that is, of course, Chapter 3 under the operative governance, and 41H is particularly relevant, where it says you are obliged to cooperate with one another in a mutual trust and good faith by fostering friendly relations, assisting and supporting one another, informing one another and consulting one another, coordinating your actions and legislation with one another, adhering to agreed procedures and avoiding legal proceedings against other. Very important. That is a constitutional obligation, and it is a point of great concern to me that all those matters of cooperation seem to be at odds here with what we have been presented. I think there's another matter, the 41E, which is respect the constitutional status, institutions, powers, and functions of government in the other spheres, and not assume any power or function those conferred on it in the Constitution. So I think we really, as a committee, have received all this information, and we need answers to this. But the bottom line is that I think a combative attitude to other organs of state is not productive, and it is in fact counterproductive in terms of what your obligations are as an organ of state to the Constitution. Thank you.
Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. First of all, I simply would like to appreciate the report from the Commission, because it really indicates the progress made up to this point.
in particular, when you look at the target, whereby they were targeting about 10 million people, consumers, to educate about the issue of consumer rights, they've gone up to 22 million, which is a really good indeed, in a short in a space of 1 year, that nothing could be achieved. But second, as my colleague, my Caucasian friend here, indicated that we're also bound by the constitution in moving forward with every activity we're doing. No, I raised this issue with the commissioner on the right line when she came here around the corner. I still don't see any Caucasian people in the commission. What's wrong with that? Because the constitution enjoins us that South Africa belongs to all women in it. So how far do you go? I know the issue of gender is balanced. I'm very happy with that one. But the issue of embracing all the races within the country is very critical. Because it's our imperative as the parliament. You know, we had to go to Kenya last week. We had to reject our delegation, in particular to comply with that. Because if we didn't do that, we're only going to have one black person who was going to go to be in that delegation. We had to reject the whole delegation so that the type of faith we put on the outside, it must be in line with our constitution. What went wrong? That's the challenge. My Caucasian friends not applying enough on the side of the commission. Really, I wanted that now for months. It was on the side that time. But as it's still continuing, I think that we have to address that. Because, I put it on record. Because, really, my friend, Mr. Lewis, must feel very comfortable when communicating with the commission. That's the other aspect. What I also want back to raise is the issue of the medical part, the medical nuclear investigation camp. The Department of Health has put certain prices for certain practices. The data consultation was about money. But we want to do private doctor. When you arrive there, you find that there's a notice that we don't use the government sanction camp. What are you doing with that? Because I think that one is very exploitive. It's actually undermining our government. Because the government has not put laws and regulations, and someone openly defines that. What are you doing with that? I think that's the critical aspect. Chair, I'll come back on the second line. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Uncle Kadebe. Yes, maybe jumping the gun just a bit, but yes, Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, yes, you are doing good work. There's a lot of work out there, and I see that you're trying to cover a lot of bases. What concerns me, though, is it seems that there's a tension between your very eagerness to set things right, that might be wrong out there, and the actual procedures followed. And this might be because of a lack of capacity inside, and it might come from financial constraints. Maybe you're not allowed, or you cannot appoint enough people. Can you explain to us what steps you will take, remedial action you will take, to try and see that procedural and technical trip-ups don't happen? I see that some of the matter that you discussed here, it seems that, according to your discussion, you're in the right, and that you are appealing some of the matters and so on. But it seems, from reading the press, that they're trying to portray the Consumer Commission in a negative light because of these technicalities. And if you are in the right, what are you doing to create the right impression in the press? Do you talk to the press regarding this, or do you find the press biased against you? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabasa, then followed by Honourable Salam.
Thank you very much, good morning, Chair. I also wish to echo the words of appreciating an unqualified report, because for a fairly new entity, it's quite an achievement. And then also the outreach, because my constituency area is one of the beneficiaries of the dealing by the commissioner, and to be fair, that has been paid, so that did a lot of how does the commission make sure that preventative actions are taken? In other words, the people that will commit the same offense fear to commit them in view of the action that has been taken against their brothers or sisters. You know, for example, here, there's the first national, the first, why do I call it first national? Sorry. Unfortunately, first national is not here. First road towing. I don't know if people have not complained to yourself, because that's where, that's one scheme where people lose cars in a matter of hours. And because those people are very fast to pick up any car that's broken on a freeway or any road. And before people know what's happening, the car is gone and forever, because then they say the following day, you have got to pay 5,000 or 6,000 to release the car from the authority. The last one is concerning the elderly people, because one of the obligations of the commission is to look after the elderly, people with disabilities, you know, their interests. There is something that if you have not yet come across, it means we must take a preemptive action of investigating it, because it's going to hit us in many ways. Where the four-room houses in the townships are targeted by men, you know, that's where greed also comes in, because men target them in this manner. They say, no, we are going to build you some garages at the back, or we can offer you a loan. And the guarantee must be your house. So what happens then is that many elderly people end up losing this house, either because of irresponsible members of the family, or either because of the persuasive skills of banks. So I don't know whether you come across that and whether you think there's a way so that we deem it before it goes national. Because 4,000 are all over the country. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Honorable Salam.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I also have got a same sentiment as my colleague. The unfortunate part is that I'm not going to repeat their way. There are two areas I just want to focus on. One is the complaint. The impression given has been that the good work has been done in respect to this matter. But the report falls short of going into details in respect of how many have been received, how many have been dealt with, and how many are outstanding, and what is the plan to deal with that. If we can just get that briefly. The second part that I want to deal with is seemingly disputes, I would not call it conflict, I would call it disputes, between the commission and the tribunal. I call it disputes because, as it is explained, it is a matter of the interpretation of the law. It is my view that if we follow what the Constitution says, a meeting can be set up and the two can talk to one another to say, what is it that we need, and what is it that we need? How far are we apart, and how can we come closer, so that we can have a working meeting? Because what I know is we don't need to be friends to work together, but we need to have a working relationship. So probably that possibility has been explored, or can it be explored? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Salam. Yes, let me just add this one or two points from myself here, from the chair. To me, in reading the documentation we were presented with, following our own research division here in Parliament, our legal division, as well as, of course, the documents. about 2 or 3 members, is the process and procedure. Now, that is a process and procedure that's been referred to not only by the National Consumer Tribunal, but also by courts themselves, where you sought recourse or redress yourself to see what could be done. So, on the one hand, from what you have given us here this morning, it really calls for a clapping of hands. You have achieved a lot. Yes, you have. But I think the point that the Honourable Sinard is making here is also pertinent to the answers of all the entities. These are your achievements. And indeed, some of them are very commendable, from 13,000 to 22,000, and that's indeed highly commendable, and we said this in the past. But on the other hand, it's the process and procedure. I think of the comment that was made here today with respect to Johannesburg. I'm Peter Johannesburg and myself and a resident, you know, obviously I'm concerned with the billing and so on, the deep interest. And yet the implication is that having made consultations with them and also a smaller entity, which I think was smaller, Hygienic Toilet Hire and Sales, it came across as a small enterprise of sorts. You engage with such people, the big boys as well as the small ones, and they have reached an apparent agreement. On the one hand, yes, we want to compound, we will, we're going to put this right, they do. In one respect, perhaps completely, in another respect, you know, and showing good faith and doing a lot. Nevertheless, a compliance notice is issued. And as I said, I may well be misunderstood at all myself, but I was of the opinion that a compliance notice is issued when you refuse to comply. You know, you keep a discussion and there's no attempt to comply, then you hit people with this compliance notice, as it were. But that rather it's the stick of the egg and not a discussion and, well, we're still discussing and putting things like one is hit. So I'd like to do some clarification on that because, and the other thing is, well, and this is where I come to staffing. Someone here referred to staffing. It could be, I'm the first to say, as the leader, as the head of something, you cannot micromanage. That is the understanding we accept. You have to macromanage. And you rely on staff then to feed pertinent information to you. And yet your staff appears to be letting you down as well. Because in these cases where you do pursue them to the NCT and as well as courts and so on, what finds the right and the wrong clauses are referred to. These are things that your staff should be there to avoid. You cannot be expected to know all of them at the head of something. And I do believe you are let down by your staff in certain cases, certainly judging on this. But what would be helpful is to know, for example, we received, we investigated 100 of these. We issued 40 compliance notices, and 20 were overturned. You know, I'm just having we don't get this from here. We don't, we're unable to extract it from here. So if that could be clarified, I think it would go a long way. But as I said to you, the unqualified audit, we haven't seen it yet, we take your word for it, is very good news. Thank you, but over to yourself now.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We've got quite a few issues that we need to deal with, but I think that all of those are the last of the context. I think that if that comes out crystal clear, that committee really wants us to address in relation to the consumer trust. cross community contracts is specifically defined in terms of the Act. If you look at Section 100 and read into the definition of prohibited conduct, it specifically indicates that prohibited conduct is any conduct that is not in violation of the Consumer Protection Act. But now, if the argument therefore follows this suggestive procedure around the issue, we would be sitting with a situation where we feel that we are not complying with the Consumer Protection Act, but secondly, consumers would be now having to wait double the time before matters are actually heard, cited, and then become that. I have to say that I would at some point hand over to our inner legal who deals with the issues on a daily basis. Now, these arguments about us having exceeded our mandate and that we have presented totally drafted compliance notices, we don't quite understand where this comes from and on what basis are we coming up with this kind of insinuation. But we take serious offense at the assertion that the commission or the commissioner is trying to usurp the power of the minister or the power of other. We would never act beyond our power. But even in that instance, being a lawyer, you cannot bestow on yourself power that you do not have. If I was to wake up, for instance, I'll just show you how this kind of assertion that these things actually make sense. If I was to wake up tomorrow and say, I am the president and I'm restoring the death penalty, I can't do that. I do not have power and law to actually do that. So how can it have to be of any significance? Or any cause or effect in relation to the complaint that we have. But I would like us to have this kind of engagement, and I'd like this committee to invite the tribunal here, because even on all public platforms where this discussion has taken place, the tribunal has not been to engage with us on this matter. But even as it may, I just want to also address the other issues with the suggestion that we are being unconstitutional, and I think the words that have been used is that we are duly combative. Madam Honourable Minister, it's a pity that I wasn't aware that we were going to engage in this, but I was brought my trial in relation to correspondence that we sent to the tribunal. I think our legal team has had and having discussions with the tribunal, and at each and every turn, we've been turned away. In fact, we reached the point whereby when our legal representative tried to contact the tribunal, they were told that if they persisted in trying to contact the tribunal, or if we persisted, we will then be reported to the Law Society and a criminal charge will be brought against us because we are unduly interfering with the tribunal. Yes, we have letters that have to say that. So it's not for want of trying. We have correspondence, we have documentation, and if this honorable house calls upon us to make that documentation available, we'll make that documentation available. That shows that we have tried to actually speak to the tribunal. And when we got to the first that we got to, whatever it was not for want of trying, but because we actually had no other way out of the relationship. But that's on one other issue. I just want to just highlight that. For us, the conduct of the tribunal has also been very surprising. First of all, we have a situation where the tribunal is preparing a report, which is not required in terms of the Act, which is not required in terms of the shareholder compact, which is not required in terms of any piece of legislation. So we are firstly taken aback as to why the report is being prepared, and interesting why at this point in time. Because this was a report that added before the competition, then it would have been prepared at the end of March. But all of a sudden, sometime in June, this report is prepared, and we don't understand why this report is prepared. But even as it may, it then is called a secret report. But somehow, it then ends up before virtually every major news, media house in the country, because I was called by media house and saying, we have this report. Can you please comment on this report? So we are also a bit concerned about why this report was prepared, and secondly, it ended up in media house, and thirdly, also for a factor in relation to my performance as a commissioner. But you had it today, we obviously have, this is not an issue that concerns this particular person. But would we like to ask that this particular person abide by the rule of our general, which is basically what you're actually requiring us to do have done so, and we see that in terms of the action and life dependencies, but in fact, we are obliged to actually undertake this kind of conduct in order to get public participation.
Thank you, members of the committee. Let me start by saying it comes to answer the members' question there. With regard to the document that he was referring to, it becomes very difficult for me, sitting where I'm sitting right now, to respond to issues that have been raised in that report. First, the issue that you raised was with regard to a challenge that the NCC exceeds its mandate. It's a very general statement. It is upheld. Because I'm actually undertaking very specific applications before the tribunal. And it is of great help for me in each and every one of those applications, if a ruling comes and says, the compliance notice is set aside because you failed to follow due process, this should have been the process that is followed. It becomes educative, it takes the process forward. It helps me, it helps the consumer, it helps everybody who is a stakeholder in the process. But what is also of concern to me is that all the letters that I've personally undertaken before the tribunal, I've never had a ruling that says that the committee has exceeded its mandate. For example, in a prayer or in a request that it was making as what it wants to be done as a result of the compliance. Secondly, the issue of post-drafted pleadings as well, it's of concern to me because some of these documents, not all of them, and I need to just point out that the methods that before the tribunal is less than 1.9% of what the National Consumer Commission does. Literally, all the methods that are before the tribunal amount to literally less than 1.5% of the methods that we deal with holistically. Now, when pleading are said to have been poorly drafted, it's all concerned to me because I do this. And it will be of help. I find it, I'm just putting a man away, I'm asked to defend poor drafting of pleadings where it is not specific. So this is the pleading that you've drafted poorly, for example. In a position where I'm not really able to answer you specifically. It looks now like I'm being defensive. The issue of contentious attitudes are addressed in the document, but the bigger team of the National Consumer Commission displays a contentious attitude towards the opponents. And I think that the opponent that gives respect to it, and with due respect, literally all senior counsels, and I can name them by name, senior counsels that have conducted matters with every tribunal, the best legal minds this country can ever offer. No one of these people has came or complained to the members of the tribunal in any of the matters that I've conducted before the tribunal to say I've displayed a contentious attitude. Not one. And neither have they reported me. I'm a member of the profession. The other thing that they could have done was that they referred me to the organized profession to which I belong to say I've shown a disrespect for the contentious attitude. It has never happened. I find it difficult for me to defend myself against such an allegation when it appears on a paper like that. The reason I dealt with the issue of asserting the ministerial power, the only document to just take on what she said is that the commission has, or the legal division for them has published. And for example, the document in terms of Section 82, which in terms of the act, the commission, it deals with the period of the commission. For example, it deals with the issue of GMOs, regulations, for example, the guidelines thereof. The Act requires the Commission to publish those guidelines. Each and every document that is done mostly has been out of Section 82, guidelines that have to be done by the Commission. And the Commission has said all of them have been forwarded to another department before they are published. So when the document comes and says the Commission is asserting the powers of the minister, I find it odd. I don't know exactly what is being referred to, and it becomes very difficult to deal with. When it comes to the issue of cooperation, the Commission would want at all costs to cooperate with the tribunal. For the simple reason that we want success at the tribunal. We want our licenses to be upheld. It gives us great joy to see our licenses being upheld because then it holds business sector to account, which is what we want, and we want to believe that what the tribunal, we do not expect the tribunal to overhold compliance notices because it has been issued by the commission, and the commission and the NCC has to work together. That's not the case. We only expect them to correct us when we are wrong, where, for example, we are not complying with our constitutional mandate for them to call us to account. But then Commissioner said, of all the judgments, because we can only deal with specific judgments that we've received from the tribunal, I am still to see a judgment that says you have exceeded your mandate in terms of the act, not one. Yes, there have been issues of, for example, you failed to follow procedure. And I want members of this city to take note of one specific example that I'm going to make. With regard to, for example, the ICT sector, we issue compliance notices. The second concern requires us, for example, compliance with ICASA. As a matter of fact, the procedure that is being set to, is the procedure that we are set not to follow, which is to consult with ICASA before we issue a compliance notice. Now, the strange thing is, none of the parties before the tribunal who argued that they have failed to follow procedure with regard to the statutory imperative, which is to consult the government, have actually came to the tribunal and said, the commission has not consulted the government. That was not the point. The point was, the commission has not consulted enough with the government. They went to the government with a set mind to tell the government what is and what is not going to be. And our argument was simple, that the government it's a statutory body like us. We're not going to consult the people who do not know what is happening. We went to the government, we consulted the government, we discussed our statutory mandate. If at all any of the parties complained that we did not consult the government, we actually argue that we find it strange that the government is not made part of that process for the tribunal to be able to hear whether it is true or not that the government has not been consulted. Because as far as we are concerned, we consulted the government. And that is the only process that I actually found where the tribunal said, yes, you did not consult sufficiently. But it comes a very moot point. What is sufficient consultation? Especially where a party that is required to be consulted, it's not before the tribunal to say, yes, we agree with the industry that the commission did not consult us. It would not have been that difficult.
Thank
okay.
You.
Maybe
what we would like
turn out of
no,
out
no, no. I just, you know, time is always the enemy. We have a chair meeting which requires my attendance, and I do want to be here. That's very, very important, you see. And I don't just want to see walk out, as it were, creating the wrong impression. But just before I leave, I will be leaving in 5 minutes, and we will be closing then, you see, for the moment, the journey. It would be very helpful, because I think that the one thing that you have indicated, and so has the Commissioner, is that indeed, with respect to matters, I think we, 3 or 4 of us face this issue with process and procedure, etc. And I think that you have just indicated, if there may well have been 1 or 2 of these areas, what is pertinent for us right here, because we're looking at going forward, is yes, there have been those, we have had these challenges, but that this is what we're doing about it. Because to me, let's try and extract the progress that can be made. I said that right at the beginning, and that's why we indicated that the progress you've made in respect of, the financial management, etc., yes, we welcome that. Now, let's take the same point here. But indeed, we did meet with National Consumer Tribunal on Friday. And had you have been able to come on 27th, it all was flowing in the right manner. So it's just that now we're facing a situation where we've almost gained back over this gymnastic bar, coming back over to no fault of the committee at all. But we have got the documentation we could get that was publicly available to us. We've tried to get documentation from yourselves. We've never refused such documentation. I think the Commissioner knows that. We welcome this documentation. But if I think you've made it quite clear that you do believe perhaps there is a different nuance to be taken from some of these points, and that we may well need your response to the matter. I think that is important as well. But I also want you to take cognizance of the Consumer Protection Act with respect to the Gazette as well. So that for us it's important that let's leave the adjective out of it, that are we complying? Are you complying? Is the National Consumer Tribunal complying? And this committee is not trying sort of, take sides or anything. We're not here at the Olympics. We just want to get to the bottom of how far are you delivering? You are new. You're a very new entity. We don't need it going off the rails. And I think fine.
I think our advantage is in that.
Let me just appeal to the weapons also on the hill roof.
Right, this is just a thing. I think that the issues of the tribunal and the commission have been dealt with extensively. There are other issues which are raised by the committee members of which they are responsible to be critical. As you correctly said, Chair, this meeting was supposed to coincide with that of the tribunal. I think that it was the issue of the commission not being available on that day. So it was not our intention to separate the two or try to do that. We never do that because what we are expected to do as parliament is to ensure that the service delivery reaches the millions of the South African people. That's the bottom line. We'll help where we're supposed to help. So I think that aspect will be is already covered by the tribunal. I think that will meet as members and decide whether we can call them back or at the same time in the same one. Question. I think that the government has to then go to the other issues. But we have follow-up questions to make on that.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ndebe. I will be asking you, need to take the floor here as the chair in a minute, 5 minutes, Renati. Honourable Ndebe.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, quite correctly, everyone in this committee is absolutely dead keen to see the National Consumer Commission succeed because it is such an important weapon in the arsenal with which we can protect consumers. The fact is that we do have very worrying information in front of us, and I think that needs to be comprehensively answered by the Commission. We have asked for your response to this document, and I hope that we will get it soon, because you're quite right, we do need to see what your response is. And as the Commissioner said, this report lists some very specific things and very concerning specific things. And, you know, I would be very interested to see what your response to those are. My only follow-up question is actually with regards to the quality of the reporting in these other two reports which come from yourself. Last week we had the CIPC before us, and it was very easy on their reports to get a kind of immediate feel for the progress that the CIPC is making, is also a new entity, similar to yourself, in getting its service delivery standards up to speed and up to standard, as it were. So, for example, when you tell us that you've received 75,000 calls, that sounds impressive, but it would be nice to know, for example, what percentage of calls is dropped. It would be nice to know, for example, what percentage of those calls are actually result in finalized investigations. You know, just a little bit more detail than the kind of 10,000-foot view would be very useful. You know, we need to get a feel for whether you're moving in the right direction on actual service delivery or not. It does seem as though you are moving in the right direction in terms of financial and audit requirements. That's very good. But I now want to see whether you're moving in the right direction in terms of the delivery on your core mandate. And frankly, these reports don't really run that field. So there's a lot of really concerning things. I think probably Chairperson, they'll need to come back, but if they can just answer on that point.
Unfortunately, they're not going to be able to answer on that point. The Chair of Chairs, the Honourable Frederick, is waiting to set up shop here. And I'm also required to have that meeting. Now, what I would like to indicate is that through no fault of the Consumer Commissioner's BSA, we'll have to speak to the SAA on that matter, but then we are going to have to meet again. We cannot leave things in the middle like this. And the only date we've got available is the 17th of August, which is a Friday. That is our only date because, you know, unfortunately, we've really lost time in the process, not starting when we did. And we do want to conclude this. What I will do, Commissioner, is also to send you, you're welcome to send me any, you know, requirements for clarification online on your part, and I will do the same on our part. So I hope that our next engagement will all avoid the strong adjectives and proceed constructive manner. We want you to succeed. Make no mistake about it. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.